We're starting. this is the House Judiciary Committee, and want to welcome everybody here this afternoon. We're going to make a couple of brief modifications to the calendar. We're going to try to make a couple of brief accommodations. We've got some people who aren't feeling well and are not going to be able to stay, so we're going to try to address that committee. So if everybody will just be patient. Great. So we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2783, and I'm going to call Ms. Schenkel if she would come forward. Is she in here? And then Brad Swank. Well, it's damn hard to accommodate people if they're not in the hearing room. David, will you look out there and see if Brad's standing out in the hallway?
He's not right there.
I thought I saw him go across the hall, Mr. Chair.
John Powell?
He's out talking to
himself. He went through the house.
I saw him walking the other way as well.
There's Brad.
All right, Brad, do you want to take the stand here?
Okay.
We're on 2783.
2783.
And I don't see Ronell. Oh. Madam Speaker, are you here for a purpose? Okay.
You can take me.
Somebody we can send to you when they show up? When he shows up, we'll send him to you. Okay, great. Is Ronell here?
Yes, he's
okay.
Yes.
Ronell, do you want to take the... We're doing your bill, 2783. And sit real close to Brad. And I'm looking for John Powell, and I don't see him, so...
He just ran to the house.
Okay, all right, so Ronell, why don't you lead off? Help her with the testimony. Yeah.
All right. Here we go. Rock and roll. I got everything filed in the bill of bills. I'm set.
For the record, Ronell Schenkel with the Department of Justice here today in support of House Bill 2783. Let me begin by reminding the committee that this bill is actually a substitute for House Bill 2112, which was before the committee some time ago. It's the bill related to the child support program requirements that licensing agencies gather Social Security numbers on their applications for the ultimate intent of being used in the child support license suspension process. We have a federal requirement that not only requires the program to have a license suspension process, but in fact includes the details of gathering Social Security numbers. And when this portion of welfare reform was enacted in Oregon in 1997, we made an oversight in the drafting, and while we picked up commercial driver's licenses, we did not get the language necessary to have this requirement on regular driver's licenses and permits. The federal government has noticed this error in our law and, in fact, has put the child support program on notice of intent that if we do not amend our statutes and come into compliance, we face the possibility of losing our federal funding. I provided to the committee in the past a brief one- or two-page document about our funding structure, and in essence, if they were to take away the federal matching dollars from the child support program, you're looking at about $85 million, and then they can also take a penalty against the TANF grant for an additional, I believe, $1.5 million would be the starting point. We needed to come back to you with this bill in order to have some DMV amendments and provisions put into the bill, and Kelly Taylor is here to speak to those amendments. But basically, they're related to holding the Social Security numbers that they gather on applications confidential from public disclosure. I will tell you that my understanding is the Dash 1 amendments are amendments necessary for the DMV compliance piece. I understand that there are also some Dash 2 amendments before the committee. I do not believe that we have agreement on the Dash 2 amendments and would ask that the committee continue to move this bill forward at this point, since it is the most important bill to the child support program due to our notice of intent. And if there is further work to be done, we could do that in the second chamber.
Okay. Kelly, are you going to come up and talk? You weren't signed up, but do you want to come up to address the amendments? Why don't you come up and sit next to Brad? And I'm afraid, does anybody else have a copy of the Dash 1s in front of them?
I do.
I don't see mine. I do. I got the 2112-1.
Okay. 2783s. I've only got the Dash.
I have one copy, and I have a market bill. I can give it up.
I have the Dash ones here.
Okay. Right. Why don't you go ahead? Why don't we have Brad weigh in, and then we'll wait for you, Kelly, until we've got the amendments in front of us. Brad?
Chair Williams, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brad Swank. I am special counsel for government relations for the Oregon Judicial Department, and I can actually speak today as opposed to the last time I was in front of your committee. Mm-hmm. Actually, my concerns about this bill are highly technical. If you look on the... Well, let me explain. One of the things that we do is we prepare master and term jury lists for all of the courts in the state, and that's done through the Oregon Judicial Department. And we get those source lists for the master and term jury list from the Department of Motor Vehicles and from the Secretary of State's voter lists. And we merge them and create a single list for each county, which we can send to them and they can use for their juries. And one of the things that we do is we try and sort out duplicates, something that's been an expensive, difficult process. We have recently been talking about asking DMV and potentially the Secretary of State's Office for Social Security numbers. Now, I don't know that we will do this, but it's been in our mind because it would make it easier for us to sort out duplicates between the two lists, so when we send the jury list to the county, Tom Jones or Joe Smith or whatever doesn't show up twice, and we don't get a defense attorney going, oh, something's wrong with the list because somebody showed up twice on the list. So that's something we've been talking about. There are two things in this bill as it's written that might impede our ability to request Social Security numbers. One of them is on page 2, lines 6 through 8, where it says the department may establish fees reasonably calculated to reimburse the department for the actual cost of making an individual Social Security number available to a government agency. We would probably be considered a government agency. The interesting thing about that language is that it conflicts with our specific statute, which is ORS 10.215, subsection 2, which says the public entity, upon written request by the state court administrator, shall provide a copy of its list for the date and the form requested without charge to the state court administrator. So you've got two statutes, and the question is, which controls, the later enacted general statute or the more specific previously existing statute? So what I'm here is to try and possibly get an amendment, but at least to get an expression of legislative intent that if we go for Social Security numbers from DMV, we're not going to have to pay an additional fee because that would jack up the price of preparing jury lists for the courts of this state. The second issue is on page 2. It's lines 1 through 4, the complete sentence that says an Oregon government agency that rediscloses a Social Security number as authorized by this subsection shall keep for 5 years records that identify each other government agency that receives the social that receives the Social Security number. If this would be an impediment to our asking for Social Security numbers from DMV because we don't currently have a system for maintaining the subsequent transfer records for 5 years, and we would have to develop one. I mention that because there, it's not a current cost for us, because we are not currently using Social Security numbers. We've talked about it because it would be a faster, easier, quicker way of eliminating duplicates for juries, and these two things, and less expensive, we hope, and these two things would be an impediment to that process. I thought you should know about that in terms of your consideration of the measure, because if you make a change, it may affect what we can do, and that's a technical issue for me to raise.
Okay, I have two questions, because we're still waiting for the amendment, right? We haven't seen... She hasn't delivered the dash 2 yet, has she?
Dash 2 or dash 1?
Dash 1. The dash 1. Here she comes with the dash 1. Okay, first question. Had you discussed this concern already with the partners on this bill?
No, I hadn't. I actually... I've got about 700 bill files on my thing, and this bill came to my attention yesterday afternoon when I was asked to do this.
We're all busy,
so it's the first time I had a chance to write.
They haven't had a chance to hear your concern. And secondly, you're not currently using Social Security numbers.
And we are not currently using Social Security
numbers. Okay, that's what I needed to know. All right, Kelly, we have the Dash 1 amendments in front of us.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kelly Taylor with the Department of Transportation. Excuse me. On the Dash 1s, may I explain first, Mr. Chair, the information that's in the bill, Section 3 and down, was requested by the agency. There is another federal act that we must comply with called the Driver Privacy Protection Act, and it is what sets out what can and cannot be shared with the public, et cetera. Each state is required to abide by that federal act, or they face a $5,000 a day fine. You all in 97 put Oregon in compliance with that law. The information that you see in Section 3 and below is making sure that Social Security number, if collected, et cetera, is also abiding by that federal law, the Driver Privacy Protection Act. The information that Mr. Swank is talking about on the top of the page that talks about an agency, if they get the Social Security number from us and then redisclose it to somebody else, that is when they must keep the record for 5 years, et cetera, et cetera. And that is a requirement of the Driver Privacy Protection Act. That's not open to conversation with Congress at this point. So that's why that language is there crafted. Now, the Dash 1 amendments are a slight further refinement on that. It is also something that our Attorney General worked with us quite closely on. And it's to make sure that if someone, that an agency that gets the number from us doesn't redisclose it unless required by law. So that even narrows the chance of redisclosure. Okay? So we need the information that's in Section 3 and below to make sure we're in compliance with the Driver Privacy Protection Act, to make sure we're not just handing out the Social Security number willy-nilly. We need the Dash 1s to further refine that to make sure we don't become the Social Security number mill for folks.
Okay, are there questions? None? All right. Go ahead and stand down. David Fedenke and David Niebel.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm David Niebel with the Oregon Law Center. I am here to speak about the need for the Dash 2 amendments or something along those lines in this bill. Clearly, for the reasons that Ms. Schenkel outlined in her testimony, this bill or something like it needs to pass, and we don't want to put the state at risk of losing funding by not passing this bill. But I am here to support this amendment, which would allow a person without a Social Security number to obtain an Oregon driver's license. The federal law does not require that someone have a Social Security number in order to get a driver's license. It simply says that they must disclose a Social Security number if they have one. And federal law is clear that states have some latitude in how they deal with people who do not have Social Security numbers. Washington, for example, has a procedure in which someone fills out a statement on penalty of perjury that they don't have a Social Security number, and that works in Washington. So, and it's important for everyone who drives to have access to driver's licenses, because people with driver's license, I think, we can assume on the whole are safer drivers, and we can also assume that they're more widely insured than people without driver's licenses. So the Dash 2 amendments are an attempt to deal with that problem. And what the Dash 2 amendments would do is, sort of in line with Washington law, if someone without a Social Security number applies for a license, they can fill out a statement that says they do not have a Social Security number on penalty of false swearing. That's the ORS that's cited in the Dash 2 amendments. And would be eligible for a driver's license based on that statement. Unfortunately, this won't work. The federal law requires a statement that you don't have a Social Security number under penalty of perjury. And secondly, which is different than this amendment, and secondly, unfortunately, under current Oregon law, just a statement by a person that the person swears is true is not sufficient. Under Oregon case law, they would need to provide a notarized statement, which then introduces more complexity into the works and makes creates more barriers for people to get driver's licenses. We found an approach that would work to solve this problem in a bill that this committee has already dealt with and the House has already passed, in the context of sworn statements in civil procedure. It's an amendment to ORCP 1, and that's House Bill 2064, and an approach along those lines would work for to solve this problem. So I understand Ms. Schenkel's anxiety to move this bill along, and if that's and we're certainly willing to work with Ms. Schenkel and Ms. Taylor and the folks that they work with to try to resolve this problem so that everyone who's entitled can get a driver's license.
Okay. Thank you, David. David?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, David Fidanke, Executive Director, ACLU of Oregon. Also wanted to testify related to the issue of sworn statements and perjury related to this bill. And this is important, Mr. Chair, because if an individual who does not have a Social Security number is required to get a sworn statement, and that would be a statement made in front of a notary, number one, that person is going to have to leave DMV and come back, which means there will be more cost for DMV in processing license applications and renewals. But it also makes it more likely that an individual who leaves and has to go to a notary might, in fact, just give up on the whole process and not bother to get a license to begin with. So we believe that it is very important to solve this problem. It would be our preference to solve it now rather than later in the process. We think it can be done with an amendment to ORS 162.055, which is the definitions that apply to false swearing and perjury. And that is indeed the statute that was amended in House Bill 2064, but it could be, we think, also amended in this bill, assuming the legislative council felt it would still fit within the relating clause. It would be related to Social Security numbers in this case, making it clear that a statement that an individual makes in connection with a license application that they do not have a Social Security number would be a sworn statement for the purposes of the perjury statute. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, in addition to that issue, we hope that The committee will certainly adopt the Dash 1 amendments. We believe they are very important to limit access to Social Security numbers. The ACLU is very concerned about the growing use of Social Security numbers as a universal identifier in both government and private databases. And this has not only implications in terms of individual privacy, but has tremendous implications in terms of identity theft. And we know the committee is very concerned about that. It would be our preference to restrict the use of Social Security numbers even more than these amendments would do and that this bill would do, but this is at least a step in the right direction.
Okay. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
I certainly would want to encourage you to work with Rennell and Kelly and others.
Mr. Chair.
If we've got a vehicle that we can use, maybe has already passed over to the Senate that might be able to make those changes, and we can revisit the policy discussion about whether or not it ought to be a sworn affidavit with penalties of perjury or some other approach, we can potentially address that. I'm not inclined to do it in this bill, given sort of the nature of this bill and its need to move, and its need to eventually find its way out of Ways and Means. Because this will, Kelly didn't necessarily testify to that in her statement when she was up here, but this bill, because of its requirements, is going to have a reasonably sizable fiscal impact. That's the bad news. The good news is that they've got an opinion that says that because it's highway related, it can come out of transportation funds and it's not a general fund issue. So there's, you know, that's the upside to that. But I feel like we need to get this bill down to the Ways and Means Committee so they can do the work they need to get it out. Okay. John, do you want to come up? John Powell? But you guys can stay there if you want, because I'm going to let other people.
Mr. Chair, there was just one other point. I just want to reiterate that the amendment that we're suggesting would lessen the fiscal impact.
Yeah, okay. I appreciate that, but I really am not sure I want to hold the bill up to try to work it into this bill. Because, frankly, looking at the relating clause, I'm not sure you get it in this bill anyway. And I'd rather not waste the time waiting for LC to tell us that and use a different vehicle. John?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Powell, representing Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon and State Farm Insurance Companies. I just wanted to raise some questions because we got to this bill late in the week to analyze it. In terms of its drafting, I noticed it's going to be codified in the Motor Vehicle Code, and the concern I raise because of that codification might be taken care of. But if you look at line 26 and 27 at the bottom of page 1, it says an Oregon government agency that receives an individual Social Security number may redisclose the Social Security number only to another government agency. And the concern I have is that there are some state agencies that work with health insurers in administering health benefits, which are clearly tied to one's Social Security number. So that probably could be remedied in this area of the law by simply at the end of line 26, saying from the department. So it would read, an Oregon government agency that receives an individual Social Security from the department may disclose that Social Security number only to another government agency. So I think that may be correctable. We're still investigating other potential situations in terms of general claims administration as to whether or not a Social Security number would ever be needed in adjudicating of those claims, and we can bring that to the attention of whatever committee the bill is before at the time we get that answer. So I'm not here to hold up the bill by any means. So the other issue that was raised very hurriedly is whether or not knowingly obtained could be defined so that if somebody by error was shipped a document from the department with a Social Security number on it, for example, an insurance agent getting a motor vehicle report on a potential client who's trying to get automobile insurance, and for some reason that number was sent, this creates a private cause of action in that case. So inadvertently, if they took immediate action to return it or whatever and not keep a record of it, some method of dealing with an inadvertent exchange of information. As you know, computers sometimes do things that the operator did not intend.
I don't know if the computer did it or not.
Yeah.
That's sort of hard. Let's go ahead and open it for questions from the committee to anybody here. Representative Sherrill.
Well, thank you. I am late. I heard some of the testimony about the concern about having to get a notary, and I'm not sure that we need to do that necessarily. You could, if you look at line 4, you could delete the word sworn. As you say, I'm looking at the dash 2 amendment, signing a statement on the application. And then in the next sentence on line 6, statement must include, you could say, an affirmation attesting to the truth. Because if you look at false swearing, which is the statute at 162.075 that gets you in there, the person commits the crime of false swearing if the person makes a false sworn statement, knowing it to be false. And under the definitions preceding that, sworn statement includes any statement knowingly given under any form of oath or affirmation attesting to the truth of what is stated. So you don't have to have this notarized, and you don't have to have the amendment drafted in such a way that it requires a notary. You can have that attestation just on the form without that extra step.
In Representative Shirley, I there may be a fix like that that's workable. I'm looking at the copy of the memorandum from General Counsel's Division, written in February, that's looking at the federal statutes that apply to this, and the recommendation from the Commissioner's Office that says that we would advise states to require a person who wish to apply for a license who do not have a Social Security number to submit a sworn affidavit under penalty of perjury along with their application stating that they do not have a Social Security number. I'm frankly more interested in letting, instead of trying to amend this here in the building or here in the committee today, to try to move this along.
If I can. That's fine. Just for state law, our sworn statement includes a statement just given under affirmation.
Right. Okay. Anything else?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Crummell.
I have a question with regards to what happens if a person refuses to give their Social Security number. Because I know there's a number of people that are concerned about privacy and about identity theft and all of those sorts of issues. And we're sort of being mandated by the feds that we have to do this. Otherwise, I would probably vote against the bill. But I'm just curious as to what happens, because it says in here that the department or the agency or the board shall require it, but it doesn't say what happens if the person refuses to give the information.
Well, I think if they don't give the information or they don't give a sworn affidavit or some other statement that they don't have a social security number, Representative Crummell, I don't think they get their license. I mean, I think it's just that simple. Either you give them the number or you give them an affidavit saying you don't have a number and you get your license. If you don't do that, we don't give you your license. It's a theoretical privilege, not a right. And if you want it, you play by the rule. If you don't want it, that's fine. Walk. But I think that's sort of how that works.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Right. I think it's going to be my preference, because this bill's got to go through the Ways and Means process, and once down there, there'll be plenty of time to work on possibly some amendments and some other bills that'll be in front of this committee or the Senate Judiciary Committee, that we go ahead and try to move this bill along. So it would be my intent to close the public hearing, open the work session on House Bill 2783, move the adoption of Representative Prozanski of the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2783. Is there a discussion on the motion? Any objection? Okay, the dash ones are in. Representative Prozanski?
Move House Bill 2783 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
It's got a Ways and Means referral.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
Does it need a Ways and Means?
It
first?
Does. Yeah.
Amend my motion to move House Bill 2783 to the Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Prozanski moves House Bill 2783 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on that motion? Is there any objection? Why don't you call the roll, Ann?
Representative Bartrett?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Crummell?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
excused. He's excused. I'm sorry.
Representative
Plazonski. Aye.
Representative Gentleman.
Aye.
Vice Chair Anderson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Ackerman.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2783 moves to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation, so we won't need a carrier assigned. And again, I'll just encourage the parties who testified to address those issues, including Mr. Powell, the issues that you raised, and I'm sure you can work with those partners on those questions. Okay, we're going to move now with great patience as she waded through that so we could move a sick person out of the building. I'll ask Representative Johnson to come forward. And thank you very much, Representative Johnson, for your patience. And do you need to bring someone with you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, with the indulgence of the committee.
Please. And which bill are we on, Representative Johnson? 2543?
We are on 2543, Mr. Chair.
All right. Then I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2543.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I'm the state representative from House District 31. Here with me today is Janet Scamahorn, a constituent from Scappoose. It is at her request that we have introduced this bill. Mrs. Scamahorn's husband was killed tragically 5 years ago in a mid-air crash involving two aircraft. And since that time, she has tried to control the commercial use of her deceased husband's image. Unable to resolve the issue, she asked my office to prepare potential legislation. That's why we're here today, and I will let Mrs. Scamahorn describe to you why this legislation is needed.
Thank you and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Janet Scamahorn from Scappoose, and I'm here as a private citizen to support this House Bill 2543 to grant individual property right in an individual's name, voice, signature, photograph, and likeness. This is also commonly known as rights of publicity or rights of personality in other states. I strongly support this property right that is separate and apart, but works in conjunction with our common law right of privacy to protect the commercial interest in the value of an individual's personality. The existing privacy, trademark, and state unfair competition laws do not adequately address this issue. This is the reason states in this country have been addressing this for the last 50 years. Legal claims have been increasing for both the living and deceased at a rapid rate, and our state needs to stay current and provide protection for its constituents with our evolving technology and commercial growth. With this defined as more than a privacy right and as a property right, it can also be assigned and inherited. My husband never gave full permission to this company to use his image for commercial purposes. They claim they had sweeping, unlimited rights to use his image. When I sought legal counsel for this issue, I found in this state the only way to address this issue was to file for an injunction and undergo examination for my emotional and physical medical problems that I suffered because of the constant contact that I endured after this accident. I needed to control the source of why this was happening, which was the increasing commercial ads they were putting out in national magazines and at trade shows. This company needed the right to use my husband's reputation and career contacts for their business's financial gain. They believed his identity had commercial value. In their own words, we saved them from bankruptcy before he died. This company did not want to take the time and money away from their business to publish other commercial materials. Instead, they focused on making commercial materials to advertise other products and escalated the use of his in magazines and on the internet. When I also talked to legal counsel on this, I found that in most cases where an individual is deceased, courts commonly refer this to the state of domicile to determine whether there is a property right or whether it can be rescinded. Heirs and deceased estates need to be able to control the commercial exploitation or use of this intangible property right in our own state. We need to be able to associate with commercially. Disclosing my personal affairs was the last resort, as I was told by legal counsels. I couldn't possibly want my privacy for making this a public issue or by bringing injunction. But in this state, I had no other choice. Last, this property right, as I have read, many seem to think it violates the First Amendment or Copyright Act, but that was not my intention in requesting this legislation. Mr. Ted Hughes, on behalf of the Motion Picture Association, has added his amendment, which I support, which provides certain statutory defenses and uses of creative expression to address this problem of advertising materials of commercial value using an individual's identity. I just ask, not for myself, I already have a settlement agreement with this company, but for current and future Oregon residences, that you pass a bill for individual property right.
We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mrs. Scammahorn. Is there questions for either Representative Johnson or Mrs. Scammahorn? We appreciate you very much coming down and sharing this information with us. We have the Dash 1 amendment with us, and I think we're going to want to give the first time the committee's had a chance to see it is today, so I think we're going to want to have that in front of us and have the members have a chance to digest that before we take any action on it today. But we appreciate you coming down and giving us your testimony. And we'll be in contact, obviously, with Representative Johnson about the bill. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We'll adjourn, or excuse me, not adjourn. all right, everybody leave. We're done. We'll close the public hearing. Representative Johnson, you had signed up on 3015. Are you on that bill as well?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I was hoping that was just a mistake, but you're there, so we're going to accommodate you as well, and I'll now open a public hearing on House Bill 3015. And welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate your courtesy. This is another bill that we have introduced on behalf of a constituent. It's dealing again with Social Security numbers and confidential information as part of public records. The fact situation in my district that gives rise to this bill is one wherein the constituent who asked to have the bill introduced is a sitting circuit court judge. He is also a former prosecutor. At the time of the dissolution of his marriage, a former defendant sought out Judge Reed's personal information from his domestic relationship proceedings. Obviously, this was very worrisome to Judge Reed, particularly given that the defendant had on his record felonies that involved the use of firearms. We subsequently have learned that Mr. Swank may have some thoughts on this proposal, and I want to assure Mr. Swank and the committee of our willingness to work with him to address the issues that he may raise for the committee's consideration.
Thank you. Are there questions for the representative? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Brad Swank and Ronell Schenkel, I think we saw Ronell wheeled out of here a couple of minutes ago, so I don't think she'll be testifying. But Mr. Swank is back up.
Chair Williams, members of the committee, once again, I am still Brad Swank, special counsel for the Oregon Judicial Department. Actually, 3015 is a bill I got a chance to look at last week. We contacted Representative Johnson's office because of a couple of issues that we thought were important. As drafted, 3015 excludes Social Security numbers from the pleadings submitted in domestic relations cases. And I thought, well, that's interesting because we can actually get rid of the pleadings after a while, the places where people, most people look when they want to get personal information, and believe me, we collect a ton of it in divorce cases and dissolution cases. They look at the judgment where the Social Security number is required to be, or that they look at the record of vital statistics that we're required to send out and send to the Department of Vital Records, where they keep information that includes Social Security numbers, too, that we provide to them. So if people... my first thought was... Well, the first thing I was asked to do was look at it for fiscal impact. We got a call from Ways and Means, and they said, is this going to cost money? And I said, well, it depends. And I didn't just say it because I was a lawyer. It does depend. There's something that's not described in the bill. It doesn't say whether you have to protect the information retroactively or proactively. If you have to protect the information retroactively, it's going to be hugely expensive because we have literally millions and millions of existing court records that have a lot of personal information, including Social Security numbers in it. Most of them are paper, require hiring somebody to go through and redact. If you're just doing proactively, we can set up a system that from a date forward starts protecting it. The second issue that came up was that this, as drafted, 3015, has the presiding judge of each judicial district setting up their own procedures for protecting these. We suspected that what was really wanted was one procedure that the Oregon Judicial Department would use statewide that would protect records from Social Security numbers, not a different system in each county. And then the other things were that if you're really interested in protecting somebody's Social Security number or whatever, you probably want to amend ORS 25020 to take the requirement for a Social Security number out of the decree or judgment under 25020 sub 8A. You probably want to amend ORCP 70A sub 2 sub A with two little I's after it. There's a requirement that a Social Security number be in every judgment. You probably want to amend the vital statistics statutes that require us to provide the information to the Department of Vital Statistics and the statutes that are relevant there, 432-405, 432-408, and particularly 432-411, that says notwithstanding any other provision of law, all marriage records and all divorce records in the custody of the county clerk, county recording officer, and all divorce records in the custody of the state courts are open and subject to full disclosure. So, I mean, there's probably a way to work around because the Social Security number is necessary for the Support Enforcement Division in domestic relations cases, and there's probably a way to capture that and transmit it on a record that isn't in the public view as the judgment is. But these are all technical issues about this bill. We did contact Representative Johnson's office because from the way it looked, the bill didn't accomplish the purpose that they wanted it to accomplish, and we thought, well, since there are records, we probably should be explaining, if you want to protect them, what you may need to do. So that's how I got involved. And I can answer any questions.
Are there questions for Mr. Swank? Representative Ackerman.
Just a couple. I'm just anticipating a couple of legal problems, and I might be working a little bit fast here, but this is an amendment to the Inspection of Public Records statute, am I correct, ORS 192?
This particular section? Yes, ORS 192501 is the Oregon Public Records Law.
Right, and since this is directed to the presiding judge of each judicial district, I have doubts as to whether that qualifies as a public body under ORS 192.410 sub 3. Have you thought about that?
I have. Chair Williams, Representative Ackerman. One of the things I do is handle public records for the courts. It's part of the legal work that I do when I'm not sitting over here. And there is a controversy going back some years as to which court records are public records. And there was a case that was brought in which the Oregon Supreme Court said without deciding the issue of whether or not court records are subject to the public records law, we're going to rule that in this particular issue, and it was an issue concerning the Rajneesh and a tape recording made of the Rajneesh for a case, we're going to rule that the person can't have the record because it's in trial. Subsequent to that, the legislature amended the public records law to specifically include court records, but they only included three records in the discussion, and those were the jury register, the court register, and the case file. So those three things were specifically included. But in addition, because of the nature of our Supreme Court, we comply with the Oregon Public Records Law at the direction of the Chief Justice and treat it as if it did apply because he's our boss.
Thank you.
Does that answer your question?
Any other questions? Okay, thank you, Brad. And we've got Ms. Schenkel's testimony, which was passed out, which I refer the committee to, which we'll put into the record.
Chair Williams, shall we work with Representative Johnson's office?
Yeah, I would like you to work with Representative Johnson and with Mr. Joseph to address the concerns that were raised. With that, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3015. Were you here for another one, Representative Johnson?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Other than to lend moral support to my good friend and colleague, Commissioner Luke.
Well, and we're happy to see Commissioner Luke. He, in the olden days, he wouldn't have had to wait in line. We apologize for making you wait, Commissioner. But we are going to now move to the top of the agenda and open a hearing on 2523. Counsel, you want to give us a little background if you well, that's happening, and we'll...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. House Bill 2523 allows the Justice of the Peace District in Deschutes County to include all or a part of the city of Bend. Proponents state this is necessary to allow that Justice of the Peace District to expand so that the city court and the county court, there are two courts in that respective jurisdiction, can better coordinate their actions.
Welcome, former Representative Luke and Commissioner Luke. We're pleased to have you in the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dennis Luke. I'm a Deschutes County Commissioner. We have a bill before you today, House Bill 2523, that would allow our justice court to operate within the city of Bend. My written testimony talks about my respect for the Chief Justice and the court system and my working with him in the past on different issues. And I've kept him fully informed as we've moved through this process. And we don't view this as an us versus them type issue, because we work together in our county as a team to provide public safety, including the DA, the Chrome Probation, the sheriffs, the courts, and all law enforcement. So we had our justice court formed in September. Started operation in September of 2000 and operated in the county. And then we formed working agreements with the city of Redmond and the city of Sisters, and we actually conduct the court in those cities in replace of their municipal courts. So we've developed those kind of partnerships with our local communities. And then we also offer evening courts for those who... for those who need to have court in the evening and so they don't take off of work. And so we try to provide a service to our constituents. We've worked very closely with our local courts. We go to dinner with them twice a year, all the judges and the three county commissioners and our administrative staff, to try to work on different issues. We have monthly meetings on the Lipstick and the court security. We are currently, because of the judge that was approved by the last legislative session, are adding a courtroom. We're actually going to add two courtrooms, and we're going to put video arraignment and video sentencing in all of those courtrooms to help speed up the process. And page 3 of my written testimony is a letter from the presiding judge representing all the judges in his jurisdictions, and they can't come out and say they support this, but they do not object to this bill. When we formed the district, we worked with our judges before we even introduced the bill and asked them what their main concern would be. And following from Judge Sullivan's request, we required that our Justice of the Peace be a member of the bar. And we found that works really well. The current... The current judge was appointed to the office and then ran, and then recently in November ran and was elected to the circuit court. And so we have a position coming open. And so it's worked as a, I don't want to use the word training ground, but it's worked as a position where somebody can get some judicial experience before they move on to a higher judgeship. The whole point, I guess, of the bill is we've gone through the process. We've required them to member the bar. We formed a cooperative working relationships with our cities. But over half of our residents cannot access the justice court in the city where they live. And so we believe this is a natural next step, that we've shown our court works, we've shown our court is needed, and now we would like to provide access to almost half of our residents. One of the things I'd like to point out is I included the statistics for the Justice Court in here. One of the things, different claims, but notice in the first page of statistics, in small claims cases in 2002, there were only 41. So far, the first 3 months, it's not even including all of March yet, there have been 155 small claims cases handled by our Justice Court. They believe there'll be close to 500 by year's end. The need for that, the court, I think, is being demonstrated. Again, we believe we've taken the correct approach. We've established the need. We've shown the cooperative agreements, and we want to be able to provide services to all of our citizens. The last section of the bill is an emergency clause. The reason for the emergency clause is the current Justice of the Peace, as I mentioned, is moving to the Circuit Court. The law requires that you live within the Justice Court district to be able to be appointed or run for that position. Currently, all the attorneys who live in Bend are not eligible to serve on that court. And if the committee believes this bill should move forward, we would ask that we do it fairly soon, so we'd have an opportunity to appear before the Senate and try to get their approval so that those who want to apply for this position would have an opportunity to. And as a side note, Mr. Chair, when the legislature approved our last judge that we've just elected, as I mentioned, required that there be an election instead of an appointment, we found that worked very well. There were four qualified candidates. We got down to two. There was a very good discussion. It was a good election, and it was a good process. And so we enjoyed that better. I think we benefited more instead of just having an appointment made. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Are there questions for Commissioner Luke?
One question, Mr.
Chair? Yes, Representative Cromo.
Does Bend have a municipal court also?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, they do. We have some preliminary discussions with the City of Bend, but there's no agreements on anything. Of course, we need to work on the bill. The City of Redmond and City of Sisters found it was to their advantage to not run their municipal court and contract with the justice. Our current Justice of the Peace is also the juvenile referee. And so about half his time is taken up as a juvenile referee and the other half as a Justice of the Peace. Our courts are looking at our 11th District Court, whatever they're called. Our court system over there is looking at taking the juvenile referee and transferring those duties to the current JP who's moving into the judge. So they kind of keep that money in-house to help them get through their short-term, probably at least a two-year budget crunch that they'll have. And so they will not replace the referee. If the City of Bend, if we're able to work within the City of Bend, the Justice of Peace position would be probably about three-quarter time. The population of Bend, of Deschutes County right now, is about 125,000. We've just finished our new projections on population, and in 20 years we'll be at 250,000. That's a substantial number increase. A little bigger than you were there, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, it's grown a lot since I went to high school there. It sure has. It sure has. Okay, are there questions for the commissioner? Thank you very much. Mr. Swank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
For the record, my name is Brad Swank, Special Counsel for Government Relations for the State Court Administrator's Office. The Commissioner's right. There actually is a good working relationship in Bend between the Commissioners and the courts, and the Commissioners have always been very supportive of courts, of improved court services. In this instance, we find ourselves in opposition to the proposal. As introduced, House Bill 2523 would allow Deschutes County to operate a justice court to provide services in the City of Bend where there is a current sitting circuit court with statutory authority to provide the same judicial services that are proposed to be provided by the Justice Court.
Traditionally, there has been a prohibition against forming statutory prohibition against forming justice courts in the same cities where there are sitting circuit courts, so the public didn't have to pay twice to provide the same services. At this time, we're not in support of the bill. We think rather that there should be a larger discussion, a statewide discussion, of which courts are going to be providing which services and who's going to be paying for those services, rather than these decisions being made on a county-by-county basis. Currently, our budget is being considered downstairs. We note that there are potential fiscal and revenue implications for the state of Oregon by allowing the Justice Court to open. We suggest that this bill be considered in terms of a larger statewide consideration of which courts will be offering which services where, and we suggest the measure be referred to Ways and Means, where our budget is being considered and those discussions can take place. I'll answer any questions.
Okay, are there questions? Mr. Swank. Okay. Why don't we go to work session? I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2523.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Cromwell.
I just want to ask you a question. Does this bill have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means?
No, I don't believe that it does.
Okay.
We have the sheet there.
Oh, sorry. It does not.
It does not. It wouldn't be... Well, I don't disagree that at some point we ought to have that broader discussion. I don't think setting this bill to the Ways and Means Committee is going to engender that discussion in the Ways and Means Committee. That's my sense.
I think you're right. Are you looking for a motion, Mr. Chair?
Sure, Representative, if you'd like to make one.
Yeah. With all due respects to Mr. Swank, I'm going to move House Bill 2523. There's not an amendment, is there?
There is not.
Okay. I'll move House Bill 2523 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Crummell has made a motion that House Bill 2523 go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on the motion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess with two recognition to the Chief Justice and great system the state runs. I think when local officials come in like we have here and ask for the ability to do something a little different in their own local community, I think that's a healthy thing, and I'd support it.
Okay. Thank you. Other comments?
Mr. Chair,
please, Representative Cromwell.
I think the only comment that I would make, and this is why I asked the commissioner if there was a municipal court in Bend also, and the potential for a municipal court, you know, they may decide to fold it into their justice court, and that's up to them. That's their local decision that they should make, not us sitting here in Salem. But with that said, I don't know this for a fact, but I would bet that there's probably municipal courts in other county seats where the circuit court also sits, and I can see how this would actually take pressure off of the circuit court. So, for those reasons, agreeing with Representative Anderson, these are the local folks just asking to be able to do something. It's a little bit different than what we might do on this side of the hill. But at the same time, I think this is a good example of local control.
Certainly, I think it's an example of a need to grant some flexibility given the current circumstances that we're in for local jurisdictions when they can work cooperatively to address this. And I recognize that flexibility sometimes moves us away from uniformity, and there can be problems sometimes with that, but I think that they've worked out an amicable relationship here that seems reasonable to me. Representative McPherson, I could tell you looked like you were preparing to say something.
Looking expectant there. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see an analogy in this situation to some broader issues that we're wrestling with, which is the lack of resources to maintain statewide support for programs that need to be conducted. And I see this as an effort to try to fill the gap locally. And I certainly appreciate the comments about the need to try to broadly and on a statewide basis solve problems, and I hope that we will continue in our efforts to accomplish that. But I think we shouldn't prevent localities from solving their needs on the shorter term basis. And I see this bill as being part of that effort, and I will support it.
And I agree. And I think all of you know that I and have joined many of you and continue to join many of you in doing everything we can to leverage and put our shoulder to the judicial resource issues that are facing us in this budget. And we'll get plenty of additional opportunities to weigh in on that. We're in tough times, and certainly their budget right now is in that process downstairs, and it's going to take all of us who deal with the day-to-day policy stuff that we know the courts have to address in this committee to help our colleagues understand how important the appropriate level of funding for the courts is. At the same time, again, I think giving some local flexibility to jurisdictions that can work these details out amongst themselves seems like a reasonable thing to do. Representative Shetterly,
well,
despite having not heard any of the testimony, we appreciate you now being here to weigh in.
Well, it never stopped me from having an opinion. No, I'm not sure this is such a stark departure. If you go out to Lancaster here in Salem, you drive right by the Marion County Justice Court, and that's got to be right on the city limits line. I mean, for all the world, it looks like you're in the city limits of Salem. So I don't think this is a revolutionary step here.
Yeah. Okay, then we won't. Representative Barker. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Barker.
One of the things I liked about it was the person has to be a member of the bar, which back in the old days in Scappoose, there was a municipal judge who would frequently be told by defense attorneys, the Supreme Court has ruled on that, you can't do that, and the judge would say, you're not in front of the Supreme Court today, you're in Scappoose, and rule that way anyway. So I think the citizens will be better protected up in Bend.
Oh, those were the days.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Well, Representative Krummel has moved the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Ann, would you call the roll?
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Krummel?
Aye.
Representative Pearson?
Aye.
Representative Kuzanski?
Aye.
Representative Shetterly?
Aye.
Vice Chair Anderson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Ackerman?
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2523 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Being the only
guy on the east side of the mountain?
The other side of the mountain in that uncharted wilderness.
Out in the middle of nowhere.
Well, I could arm wrestle you for it being born and raised in the Bend city limits, boy, but I'll give
okay.
it. No. I actually would. I would like you to carry it. All right. Will you carry it? Good. Thank you very much.
You've been gone long enough, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I've been valley-eyes, haven't I, Representative Jensen? Valley-eyes.
As we all have, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we're going to open a public hearing now on House Bill 2589. Marge Kafori and Henry Lazenby.
A.K.A.
It is
smart twin.
It is smart twin.
It is a pleasure, a distinct pleasure to have you in front of our committee again.
It is for me so far too, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I do have the questions here.
Courts and Social Security numbers. You came on a great day, Jim. You just
I did.
Came on a great day.
I've been scintillated, sir.
Yeah, I know. Who's going to lead off?
I am, Mr. Chairman. I am Marge Kafori, Director of Government Relations for the City of Portland, and I was going to introduce my colleague, Mr. Lazenby, but unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your point of view, he is well known to most of you on this committee. The City requested House Bill 2589 on behalf of the Portland Development Commission. Mr. Lazenby's current position is as Chief Counsel for the Portland Development Commission, and he would like to explain this bill to you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Chip Lazenby. I am General Counsel for the Portland Development Commission. House Bill 2589 is a small amendment to the Oregon Public Records Act. Several sessions ago, I believe it was two sessions ago, Representative Shetterly introduced a bill that allowed housing authorities to receive certain financial information, including market analyses and pro formas and other financial data from private entities or business entities, and have them not be subject to disclosure under the Oregon Public Records Act. As the Development Commission, the Urban Renewal Agency for the City of Portland, as well as the city's economic development arm, the Portland Development Commission, and other urban renewal areas are involved in a variety of interaction with private businesses, both in terms of projects we're actively pursuing, but also trying to lure businesses into Oregon to create jobs and to establish here. In the course of doing that, we come in contact with a variety of proprietary financial and other business data information, and under the current state of the law, as an urban renewal agency, we are not able to give these companies assurances that their proprietary financial data can remain private and confidential. Since the legislature has previously acted to carve out this exception for housing authorities who need very much the same information for different purposes, the purpose of this bill, my request, was simply to add urban renewal agencies under ORS 457, such as the Portland Development Commission, but others as well, so that we can receive this information and be able to assure private businesses that their data won't be subject to disclosure to their competitors or to be published in the paper and other media. That is essentially the effect of this, and I have prepared testimony that was distributed to you that I haven't recited, but I'd be happy to answer any questions that members of the committee might have.
Questions? Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chip, I think it might be helpful for the committee to hear some examples of the types of organizations that you're getting this kind of information from and how it would be important in their business to have this change made in the law.
Sure. One of the examples, and I cited in my written testimony, has to do with our efforts on behalf of the city to help the Meyer and Frank department store remain in downtown Portland. Part of it has to do with the age of the building, but part of that also has to do with the continued viability of that operation and what they might need in order to sustain their operations in downtown Portland. That required us to receive sensitive data about their marketing, their sales record, what their current financial state was. And for those of you that are familiar with the retail market, you know that it's a tremendously competitive national market and international market in some ways, and that this proprietary data in the hands of their competitors could have been devastating to them. Our staff at PDC, in working with them in trying to craft a solution to the downtown store, had to resort to going to their offices and looking at documents and not taking notes in order not to create a public record. That's a tremendous waste of resources that we have, when if we could have possessed those, we could have done a better job of working up pro formas and other aspects of what we're trying to do in connection with that. We similarly are involved in trying to attract various enterprises to join with us in developments that we're doing, particularly retail establishments to come in and anchor developments that we're doing that create housing. In order for us to pick and choose between those, since we are putting money into these and are looking on how we're going to be able to pull our money out as the development goes forward, we need to evaluate potential tenants and as well as to see what kind of business partners they're going to be in the development as we go forward. Again, in order for us to get that data and retain it at this point, many of those companies who are approaching us or that we approach want some assurance of confidentiality, and under the current state of law, we're unable to give them that.
Great. Thank you. Are there other questions for Mr. Lazenby or Ms. Kapori? Is that it? I don't see anybody signed up in opposition. Are you aware of any opposition to the bill?
I had suspected that the newspaper association might have some concern about it, although Mr. Gallagher said that he had no opposition to this.
Okay. All right, it's nice to get that on the record.
Okay. He's decided.
At least he was undecided this morning. That's right. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you
very much. Okay, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2589. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2589. Representative McPherson.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2589 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative McPherson moves House Bill 2589 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Okay, and call the roll.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Excused.
Representative Crummell?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Representative Kuzanski?
Aye.
Representative Shetterly?
Aye.
Vice Chair Anderson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Ackerman?
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2589 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative McPherson will carry the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Now we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2658. Counselor.
Security bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, House Bill 2658 exempts public employees and volunteer Social Security numbers from disclosure under the public records law. As we all are aware, Social Security numbers are very valuable information, and with the rising amount of identity theft, this proponents claim that this measure is necessary to protect public employees and volunteers' Social Security numbers from disclosure and better encourage more people to undertake public employment and volunteerism.
Okay. I've got Mr. Landauer and Pete Casting from the City of Portland.
And Representative Merkley just walked in.
Oh, Representative Merkley, the sponsor of the bill. Do you want to come forward? Why don't you bring Mr. Landauer and Mr. Casting with you, if that's okay. You got your breath there?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was a quick sprint down here. I knew this was such a good bill, the hearing might be short, so I thought I'd better get here quickly. It's a pleasure to testify before you today. I'll be very brief and in order to yield to the experts here at the table. But essentially, this is one of those bills that is trying to address the problems that occur via Social Security numbers. Those numbers have become enormously important in regard to personal privacy because they are so powerful in enabling people to seek out information and adopt the identity of those individuals who actually own the numbers. So this is an issue that different groups have wrestled with across the state. And on this particular bill, we're looking at whether or not, like birth dates and addresses, this is information that shouldn't be disclosed when inquiries are made about public officials. So it'd be very useful to clarify this, and I'll yield to the experts to explain additional details. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Do you need to be excused back to wherever you were at?
I would like to be. Thank you very much.
I just want to make sure there are any questions for Representative Merkley before he leaves? Okay. Thank you very much, Representative. Okay. Mark?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing this bill today. I'm Mark Landauer with the City of Portland's Office of Government Relations. I've asked Pete Casting, Chief Deputy City Attorney from the City of Portland, to speak on the city's behalf on this measure. Thank you.
Chair Williams, Mr. Members of the committee, I'm Pete Casting with Portland City Attorney's Office. I will also keep my comments brief. I think many of the points made in my written materials are pretty self-evident and may rise to the level of common knowledge. The first point discussed in the materials is that there is a very important linkage between Social Security numbers and identity theft. I think you're probably all aware of that, and I don't need to talk at length on that issue. It may be worth noting that doing something as cursory as a internet search on the phrase preventing identity theft plus the words Social Security numbers yields about 900 hits with warnings from virtually every body you can imagine about the importance of keeping Social Security numbers confidential. The reason this bill is being proposed is that Oregon law currently does not clearly exempt Social Security numbers from public disclosure as a default proposition. As you know, under the public records law, every public record is subject to disclosure unless it falls within one of the statutory exemptions. There are three statutory exemptions that are potentially applicable to Social Security numbers. There's only one Oregon case that addresses the question of exemption of Social Security numbers, and that's a 1984 case dealing with the exemption of records that are exempt under federal law. And the holding in that 1984 case is, excuse me, 1986 case, the holding in that case is that the federal law does not exempt Social Security numbers from disclosure. That case also said in dicta that two other potential exemptions, the exemption for information submitted in confidence and the exemption for information of a personal nature, do not apply. The City of Portland takes the position that circumstances have changed considerably since 1986 and that the personal privacy exemption ought to be applicable, but that issue has never been resolved in Oregon law. So this bill would resolve that issue as a preventative measure. It would not be necessary for Portland or anybody else to litigate the question. And I think that one of the important benefits of this bill is that it would be of assistance to smaller jurisdictions who would have less in the way of resources or inclination to fight about the issue if a request was made for disclosure of that information. That's all I had to say about it, unless you'd like to ask some questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kaskin. Are there questions for Mr. Kaskin or Mr. Landauer about the bill? Why don't you two stay put, because we may have some after Mr. Swank comes up. Brad?
Chair Williams, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brad Swank, Special Counsel for the State Court Administrator's Office. I come simply to point out a technical issue that you may want to consider in your deliberations. That technical issue is highlighted on page 1 of the bill, lines 18 and 19, actually. It says this exemption does not apply to such employees or volunteers if they are elected officials, except that the judge or district attorney subject to election may seek exemption essentially under ORS 192.445. So as written, this bill would protect, for instance, the three of us at the table and Mr. Joseph, but the rest of you, your Social Security number would be a public record. And that would be more so, particularly since you specifically excluded it here and did not mention it in the laws applicable to elected officials. There is a, when the original name, date of birth, and telephone provision number provision that you see in 3A of 192.502 was written, there was an existing provision in 192.445 that's cross-referenced here that allowed elected officials to apply to have their name and telephone number withheld. You may want to make them have to apply to have the Social Security number withheld, or you may want to create a separate exemption that just has their Social Security numbers not subject to public disclosure. I thought it was a tick in the law that you would like to know about, that as written, you may have exposed yourself to some things that you didn't want to be exposed to in terms of your Social Security numbers getting up. Just a technical issue I thought you'd appreciate.
Okay, appreciate that. I guess my sense is that, I mean, it's current law the way it is now without, I mean, we're still exempted. We're obviously adding Social Security number to the list for the average public employee or volunteer. So, you know, we're still not included, I guess, as an elected official. We do have committees, some bills coming to us that are going to be addressing the issue of address information exclusion, particularly Representative Barker has a bill that applies to district attorneys' address information in DMV issues. We've got another bill coming over that came over from the Senate related to OYA, Oregon Youth Authority employees who are making the same request. I view as probably merging those two bills at some point in this process. We could at least address some of that, but it doesn't probably address the Social Security number. My sense is that we haven't worried about it up till now. I'm not sure that, you know, at this point I want to take a lot of time worrying. Are you worried about it, Representative Przanski?
Well, it seems like, Mr. Chair, that we're looking at trying to make these fixes, and that is one area for identity theft that is astronomical as to the impact that it can have. I mean, I don't know if the Chair wants to not entertain an addition to this one that would, in fact, take care of it. It seems like we can do it pretty quick. I've got a feeling that we're going to be continuing to revisit this each and every session.
Well, that's sort of my point, is that I think we can make these sort of as we go along, because I think we're going to keep coming back to this issue. and I don't know that we need to slow this one down to get an amendment. The other option would be that if we're interested in doing that, we can always, we can ask for the amendment to be, Mr. Joseph can draft an amendment for the bill to attach when it gets to the Senate side. We can concur in that if we're interested. I do think if we start moving down the road, though, when we talk about limiting access to elected official information, we're going to draw more concern from people about that. You know, I don't think Social Security numbers ought to be disclosed under any set of circumstances, but some of that other stuff is just going to raise people's hackles a little bit. Representative Sherwood?
Yeah, thank you. I don't think that, Social Security numbers is going to raise anyone's hackles as far as elected officials exempting themselves from disclosure of that information. And I would support an amendment either in this committee or down in the Senate if that's the way we want to go. Because I think there's one danger in doing this. To the extent the law is not clear, we're making it very clear right now that if you're not a
public employee.
Well, yeah, if I'm just trying to think. Yeah, we're making it very clear that elected officials' Social Security numbers are free information unless you happen to be a judge or district attorney. So to the extent that it's unclear now, we're making it clear that elected officials' Social Security numbers are otherwise accessible as public information. So I think as long as we're doing this, we ought to address the whole thing rather than leave that exposed.
Well, we could certainly ask Mr. Joseph to try to get an amendment from legislative counsel and hold the bill here and amend it here. The danger, I don't anticipate any real danger with getting an amendment on the Senate side if that's the change we want to make. Once we let the bill out of our possession, it's no longer ours to amend. So if the committee's preference would be to keep the bill, to obtain an amendment, and to put the thing back on for work session probably sometime early next week, we could do that.
I'd rather do that.
And if that's the committee's preference,
I think we just could send it on over. The Senate's going to go put that amendment on it. I can't imagine a problem there.
Well, the only problem once we get the bill to the Senate would be making sure that they actually hear it. So the danger is that, but that's a danger that Mr. Landauer is going to have regardless of whether we amend his bill here or not. Yes, Representative.
Mr. Chair, it seems to me that we can get that amendment pretty quick. Based on my dealings with LC, they've been able to turn out amendments within a matter of days.
Yeah, I think we can put the bill back on sometime early next week and get an amendment from LC. And I think the sense of the committee, just for counsel's benefit, is that it would be an amendment that would allow Social Security number information of an elected official to be protected. But is it the committee's sense not to change the other information in the sub 3A, large A, other than including all elected officials' Social Security information, but not providing the same limitations for district attorneys and judges that are currently promoted? You follow that?
No.
We can do it offline. We don't have to do it here. But right. I think I want to make sure the committee senses we're really talking about all elected officials' Social Security information being limited.
Mm-hmm.
Judges and DAs keep their continuing opportunity to get their exemption from address-related information and Social Security information.
And telephone.
Right.
And telephone. But it's just Social Security numbers for the balance of the rest of the elected officials.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Crummell.
But maybe, and I don't know if this creates a bigger deal or not, but I would suggest that elected officials' Social Security numbers and dates of birth, although many of us do go ahead and put our dates of birth out there, and it is kind of public information.
Yeah, I don't.
Standpoint of driver's licenses and that sort of thing. That is one of the things, though, that ID thieves do use.
Right. I think the problem with date of birth is that it appears, date of birth for elected officials appears in almost, it's the blue book. I mean, I think we're obligated to give up date of birth. So no matter how hard you try, Representative Crummell, you can't stay 39. Yeah. All right. Okay. You see where we're headed? You guys have any problem with the small discussion and change we're going to probably make?
Not at all.
Okay. With that, then, we're going to close the hearing on House Bill 2658. And we are going to move down to 3107 and open a public hearing on 3107. And, Mr. Hatch, we appreciate you being so patient with us today.
Somebody has to be last.
we hope that you were able to, I know you had a conflict with the Ways and Means Committee, were you able to resolve that and testify where you needed to testify?
There were some challenges on the committee and some of the members left, and so that issue didn't go very far.
Okay.
But Chair Williams and committee.
Well, you see how easy we are to get along.
Yes.
So it's
yes.
And you're already ahead based on the sponsor of your bill. So
appreciate that.
Go ahead, Mr. Hatch.
Chair Williams and committee members, thank you for allowing me to testify today. What we've Representative Williams, the bill that he sponsored for us does, is open up the language in the 911 statute to allow the use of the database that's maintained for enhanced 911 purposes for the purpose of making emergency notifications to the community. Currently, that database can only be used when you get information that an emergency exists at that location, and then we can go into that database, say if a relative calls and says, I just talking to my mom and the phone went dead. I'm not sure what the address is, but here's the phone number. We can go into that database, find the address, and send help. And that's the only allowed, the only purpose that that database is allowed for at that point. With this change in the law, it would allow those of us with community notification systems or reverse 911 systems to load that database into that system. And if we had a hazmat incident around a neighborhood or, you know, some other kind of emergency, the field responders could go onto a map and draw a circle around that area, record a message into the system, stay in your house, you know, things are going to be fine, don't come outside, hit a button, and this thing will make mass notifications to every phone number in that area. Right now, the only database that we can use is what would be considered the White Pages version, and that's with no non-published telephone numbers available. And in Washington County, I'm out of the 265,000 telephone lines. That's 100,000 homes that I wouldn't be able to reach with our system. So that's what we're asking for, the purpose that we need it for, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
And just to make sure, Mr. Hatch, that we're clear, you currently have access to that database now, but you can't use it for this mass notification, right?
Chair Williams, that's correct.
And there isn't any kind of a commercial basis upon which that information would be used by a 911 service. So there's, I mean, it really is for this purpose. I mean, there's no other purpose that a 911 service would have to use this information. Isn't that right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Are there questions for Mr. Hatch? I really view this, particularly given, colleagues, sort of the increasing issues that we're dealing with, you know, homeland security and the broader issues of local emergency response conditions, whether it be, you know, closing down a neighborhood because of a police incident where you need to shut down an area and say we've got some, you know, stay in your house because there's somebody with a gun who's, you know, running through the streets, or it's the hazmat situation, a chemical spill or the like. I just think that this provides an amazing opportunity to increase the level of sort of emergency notification and security within our communities that have, and I'm not sure that every 911 service has the technology to do this yet, but the ones that do, certainly it seems to me, ought to be able to use it to their benefit. Representative Brzezinski.
Mr. Chair, I'll be supporting this bill since I know the city of Eugene actually has used this system to do just that in emergency situations, hostage situations, as well as police. So I want to make sure they're doing it legal.
Yeah. That always helps, doesn't it? Push the button and ask questions later. That's the way they do it in Eugene. Anybody else have a comment or a question for Mr. Hatch?
No,
go ahead, Representative Cromwell. You just want to make a statement? Or?
No, actually, it's more work session related.
Okay. All right. Nothing else? Thank you very much, Mr. Hatch. Appreciate your testimony and you coming down. We're going to close the public hearing on 3107. Open a work session. Representative Crumble.
On line 20, and I wouldn't normally pick this out, but on line 20 it says, or notifying the public of an emergency are not be subject. I don't think that's a correct sentence.
And I think that the B should probably be eliminated. So it would say, reporting system or notifying the public of an emergency are not subject to an action for civil damages as a result thereof.
Beautifying the ORS right in committee.
I can't even say it. You get that award for catching the typo, Representative Crummell. That's good.
I know that in law school, the first thing they teach lawyers is not how to write a complete sentence in a succinct way, but I don't think it goes quite that far.
Not touching that one.
Yeah. Are not be subject. Okay. All right.
Sexual amendment.
Yeah. So I would... is it appropriate, Mr. Chair, to make a conceptual amendment to remove the word B from line 20?
Representative Crummell moves that we suspend the rules in order to conceptually amend House Bill 3107. Is there any objection to his motion to suspend the rules?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure whether R is the right. Yeah. Let's see, any telecommunications utility that provides confidential or non-public information,
including non-public,
to emergency service providers. Who is R modifying? I think R just modifies telecommunications utility, doesn't it? So it would be is. I think that's who's not subject.
Of an emergency, okay. Are not subject.
All right, everybody take a minute and read it slowly.
Okay.
I think R goes back to modify telecommunications utility.
Emergency services providers. Is it the emergency services providers that it's modifying?
No, that's...
I think the shall should not have been deleted. It should have been... The insertion should be elsewhere.
Well, they tried to beautify it with that.
To emergency services providers who are responding to emergency calls placed to a 911 or enhanced 911 emergency reporting system or notifying the public of an emergency...
Shall it not be subject. Notifies or is notifying. Because telecommunication utility that in good faith provides, yes, or notifies the public, unless it's the emergency service that's doing the notifying.
That's who's doing it.
Yeah, it's not the telecommunications utility that's doing the notifying.
It's only the telecommunications utility that is not subject to an action, I think, as a result of providing confidential.
That's right.
So I think we need an is.
Is.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I just want to inform all of us that we'll probably be on the videotape as the English class.
The shall that was deleted before this insertion, I think, needs to be in there. It should be after reporting system in line 20, it should be or reporting system or notifying the public of an emergency
shall
not be subject.
Elsie's been deleting shall including the word must if it has
or
to.
Are, or
right. Must,
is.
May, or
is. Okay, I would accept
it. We're anti-shall now.
Yes, we don't.
Is shall not. Is
we
not
shall not do that anymore.
Is not subject. Why doesn't is not subject work?
It does.
Or notifying the public of an emergency is not. Are not.
Yeah, let's just do it.
Yes.
Okay. We have suspended the rules, didn't we?
Yeah.
Did we get that far?
That.
We did suspend the rules. So the rules have been suspended to take a conceptual amendment to House Bill 3107. And Representative Crummell moves that we conceptually amend line 20 of House Bill 3107, deleting the word are. On line 20.
A-R-E, that is.
A-R-E, after the word emergency, and inserting the word is, and deleting the word B-E, following the word not. Is there any objection to his motion? Hearing none, the bill is conceptually amended.
So now, Mr. Chair, since I got us going on in English, I would move House Bill 3107 to the floor, as amended, to the floor.
Thank you.
I know it's your bill, and you probably should have done the motion, but
no,
I'll
right.
do it for you.
That's all right. Thank you, Representative Carmel. He moves House Bill 3107 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on that motion? Okay. Go ahead and call the roll, Ann.
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Excuse.
Representative Carmel?
Is in favor. Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Representative
Krasowski? Aye.
Representative
Kennedy? Aye.
Vice Chair Anderson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Ackerman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Williams?
Aye. House Bill 3107 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I'm going to carry the bill.
Wow.
But appreciate all of your support, especially yours, Floyd, when it gets to the floor.
That's right.
Okay, and we'll find out when we see the printed version of the amendments whether we got it right or not.
Mr. Chair, we probably should have an emergency clause for Eugene, but we'll make it through.
You'll make it through. Okay. Good. All right. With that, committee, we are adjourned for the afternoon.
Members of the committee.